Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's going on, everybody? Zach Rosenblatt back here with Darryl Slater for the latest episode of Talk is Cheap. OTAs and minicamp are over. It's a summer break. We got a day early, which you and I were talking about. It was a strange feeling because, you know, we were mentally prepared for, like, Thursday to be the last day. And then when we find out we just don't have to go in, it's kind of like if, like, you went to school and summer break was supposed to be on Thursday, but they just actually, you guys can just not come back on Thursday. You're good. Like, it was like the weirdest, I don't know. I just, like, when they told us, like, the night before, they didn't want us to spoil it for the players, I think, cause they did, like, a barbecue instead of practice, to end things. And it was just like, I was just, like, mentally ready to go. All right, this is the last day, you know, you say goodbye to everybody for the summer. You're right. Have a good summer in their yearbook, and then you go back home.
Yeah,
we didn't get that.
Yeah, you know, we didn't get to say any fond farewells to Brian Daboll. Thursday today we're talking here Thursday night, yeah. So today's practice is going to be so light. It was like on the schedule for 45 minutes. I mean, you see a lot of teams
walk through. Yeah,
yeah, you see a lot of teams do this here. At the end of mini camp, or even the Jets did it today for their I guess if this is going to come out by the time everyone knows it, but they did the same thing for their last OTA. They have their mini camp next week, but teams have done this, like, in the past where they'll do, like, some kind of in lieu of the final practice team outing, bowling. I think the Jets have done bowling before, and I don't recall if Joe Judge never really had a normal off season, like, in the spring,
which is kind of crazy to think about now. Yeah.
So they did that. They did the, you know, I would like a full report on if there was a hot dog eating contest and who won.
Who do you think would win that? I'm trying to think who would be good at that.
I mean, the easy pick would be the biggest guys, right?
Yeah, I would feel like Feliciano. I feel like Evan Neal can probably throw them down pretty quick, but, you know, does he move his hands quick enough? Who knows? I mean, he has pretty quick hands.
You also have to have, like, no sense of decorum to excel on a hot dog, like, no shame.
You know who I feel like could be a sneaky good one is Justin Ellis. I mean, the guy's nickname is Jelly. That just seems like a guy who would do well in an eating contest.
You have to embrace sloppiness and be willing to be aggressively just a belligerent eater to be a good hot dog eater. Like, some of these guys are, you know, Evan Neal, mild-mannered guy. I might be able to eat more hot dogs than he could. We're not going to go on a tangent, but I've done a hot dog
before. This is what the people want, I think. I'm trying to think of, like, a low-key guy that's not, like, you know, a lineman that would be, like, good at this, but I can't really think of one.
You know, it's funny. The typically, like, sometimes you see these competitive eaters, like Kobayashi is a super light guy. What if Cordell Flott could eat his weight in hot dogs? You know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they're one of the guys that are like that, yeah. I mean, so they do a thing, I think they stopped doing it, but there's a thing called Wing Bowl they would do every year.
Yes.
Put on by, like, a local radio station, and there was this, like, small, like, Asian lady that would win a lot of the time. Like, she was just, like, a beast at eating wings. It was like, the craziest thing.
I know who that is, right? I think Sonia Thomas is her name. I know what, just
yeah, that might be it. Yeah.
Disturbing amount about competitive eating. Just, I had, you know, a little bit of an interest in it for a while there. But anyway, that's too bad that no more Wing Bowl. And I don't know. I'd love to know what was on the spread today.
I'm sure they had a professional chef cooking, but I like the idea that Daboll was the one, like, grilling it up. You know, he's the grill master.
I was thinking about this. So they said organization wide. So if you're making your kitchen staff work cook, that's not the whole organization. Like, that's, I don't know. Whatever.
I just got an image in my head of Dave Gettleman on, like, a line and, like, wearing an apron and grilling up some burgers for people. With a smile on his face. Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe he was there. I think he's come through a few times over the course of the year, so maybe he was there. Who knows?
Well, his imprint is very much on this roster. We all know that.
All right. On that note,
couldn't resist.
On that note, so before we, like, get into the nitty gritty of, like, you know, just looking back at minicamp and OTAs, because there's a lot to take away. Like, what's, like, your overall feeling coming out of your first Brian Daboll spring?
Well, I think you captured it pretty well in the post you put up today. And I know you you mentioned when we were talking before this, you're going to do it whenever OTAs concluded, but now they were, or minicamp concluded, you had to kind of get it together quickly. But these were all thoughts that, you know, we had talked about, and that, you know, obviously were the main takeaways, right? And I think you did a good job capturing everything. And one of the main things I think that what we've noticed is, you know, he's a little bit more laid back than Joe Judge. Now, I don't know where Brian Daboll falls on like the laid back versus not laid back spectrum of NFL coaches, but yeah. So I don't know. Is it like overcorrection? Who knows? But like, I think it was a fairly normal approach, right? He didn't. Yeah, he's not pushing.
It might feel like wildly different, but I think Judge was like the other extreme. So.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not just the punishment lap stuff. Yeah. You know, he obviously.
I feel like the lap stuff is maybe overblown more than like some of the other stuff, honestly.
Yeah, these were pretty light practices. And I'm not even just talking about like taking it easy on injured guys, because any coach with a common sense will do that in the spring. But they were fairly light practices. And it was interesting to hear him also talk fairly openly and directly when he was asked about whether he would have a leadership council.
Yeah, I thought that was the most interesting thing he said the whole spring, honestly.
Yeah, and he was pretty direct. I mean, now, he's not necessarily ripping Joe Judge.
But I'll read the quote, because it's an interesting quote. Just like,
yeah, go ahead.
Let me pull it up right
now. Oh, while you're doing that, the context of it, you know, I didn't take it as him ripping Joe Judge. I thought he was pretty, but he was criticizing that approach. I don't know whether he knew that Joe did that with a leadership council, well, but
that,
he was. Well,
I mean, Joe Judge isn't the only, like, I think the Eagles even did that with Doug Peterson. Like, that's
it's not some novel
approach. I don't think it's just a different approach, like we're saying. But so the quote, he says, I think it's important to talk to your players. I think just because you have experience and you're a good player doesn't necessarily mean you're a leader. Everybody can be a leader in their own right, doing what you're supposed to do when you're supposed to do it. That's the first of being a leader. We have a lot of guys that I think fit that mold. How it pans out when we vote for captains, which will be a vote for the players. It's their team. That'll be down the road, blah, blah, blah. But his whole point being, like, he wants the whole team to be involved in these decisions, not just, like, a group of five guys, which I think makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know. Who picked the leadership council last year? Was it Judge or was
Judge,
it?
I think Judge did.
See that? So what that is.
I might be wrong, but I think he did.
I think Dable's point is, like, we're going to have the players pick the captains, and those guys are going to be the de facto designated leaders. Of course, everyone will have the ability to lead and have a say. But what good? I'm just kind of translating what he's saying. But what good is it if I'm, as the coach, picking leaders when the players should be doing it, right? So why have a leadership council that's picked by the coach if you're going to have captains that are picked by the players? It's like it kind of undermines it maybe a little bit. I don't know.
This isn't why he's doing this either, but like, it's such a young team and they have all these new players and stuff. Like, I think it makes sense to kind of like have an open door policy type situation.
Look, I mean, they're going to have young guys. We kicked this around. We can talk about throughout our next few podcasts or whatever, but like, just touching on it real quick, the obvious, they're going to have a lot of young guys not only contribute, but have big roles. Evan Neal, Kayvon Thibodeau, everyone knows these things, you know, maybe Cordell Flott. And so they're going to be not just a young team, but a team that has a lot of young starters. So who's to say that some of these young guys can't lead immediately? There's certainly no rule against it. I mean, you've seen, you know, when it was going well for Jamal Adams of the Jets, he was the leader early on in his career. So that maybe hasn't always been the case with the Giants, just because of the composition of their team. But I don't see any reason why a guy like Kayvon Thibodeau, who's very vocal, couldn't be a leader.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So what I wanted to do to kind of go through everything, I figure we could go like position by position, and we could, if we have any takeaways, like I'm sure some of them will be short, but I figured there's so much stuff to sort through, I figured we could go position by position if we have any like thoughts from what we saw throughout the spring or whatever. Quarterback, I mean, it was kind of hard to evaluate Daniel Jones because he didn't have any of his receivers, although he might not have these guys all the time anyway. I didn't see anything particularly bad from him or particularly great. I think Tyrod Taylor did honestly impress me, because I think he was playing with worse players, especially on the offensive line, though it's not like the starters looked amazing. And he just like throws a good ball, and you and I pointed out a couple times during one of the practices, he was like doing the Mahomes-esque like sidearm to fit it into a tight window. He throws a pretty good deep ball, and he could still move pretty quick, but I don't know. It's just like, right away, it's obvious how much better he is than the backups they've had here for a long time.
Yeah, and I think even independent of that, he is, you know, he's a legit backup quarterback. I mean, even taking away comparisons to the previous guys, Colt McCoy and Mike Glennon. And yeah, he still has, for an older guy, like, it's funny because he's pretty old at this point, and he's going to be, by the time the season starts, 33, because he turns 33 in August, early August. So, but he still moves pretty darn well, and he can not only move, but he can throw on the run. Now, he's never been the tallest guy, yeah. And certainly has shortcomings, but
yeah, there's a reason why
changing arm angles, being able to improvise. Like, I think I mentioned this to you when we were watching practice. He has like a bit of a sandlot quarterback feel to him. And I think I had mentioned this to you. My first job at a college, I was covering high schools down in his area of Virginia. And so I'm really old now, right? I covered a guy.
You've been able to track his journey from day one. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when he was in high school in Hampton High School down in Virginia. And that was his MO. He was a three-star or a three-sport athlete, and he that was his thing, you know, like playground style, sandlot style, dual threat quarterback, all that stuff. So obviously he was a really highly recruited player and played really well in college, and wasn't just like a running quarterback. I mean, he threw for a ton of yards and all that stuff, and has made a lot of money and acquitted himself well as a quarterback in the NFL for a guy who, there was talk when he was coming out that he would maybe potentially have to change positions, play receiver, you know, obviously on a lesser level than what you heard about like Lamar Jackson, which was misguided. But he's acquitted himself well, and he's a guy who couldn't, they hope they don't have to play him, but if they do, I think that they will be okay.
They won't lose six in a row, maybe like they did last year.
I would be shocked if that happened.
Yeah. All right. Running back. I mean, I feel like it's touching a lot of the same territory we've already touched with Saquon. Like they're clearly going to use him as a receiver. They've been moving him around a lot. This is as healthy as he's been probably since going into his first or second year. He said some interesting stuff about how he like admitted that he didn't really feel like he was playing with much confidence like the last 2 years, which I think you could see if you actually watched the game, but hearing him actually say it, I found it interesting. But big year for him, obviously, but I mean, we don't need to talk about Saquon too much. The backups, I mean, Breida looks fast. The other guys didn't really stand out. That'll be more of running backs is training camp fodder more than right now, I feel like. It's not like they're running the ball very much right now.
You can't really read a read on it because there's no pads. Yeah. There's no tackling.
Yeah. So, but it is interesting how they're using Saquon, lining him out with receivers, stuff like that. So that'll be something.
That is interesting. Yeah. I mean, he's a guy who had that asset and that ability. And, you always want guys to stay healthy, right? Like, no one's rooting, none of us are rooting for players to get hurt. Obviously, with Saquon Barkley, you just hope, you know, you obviously hope he stays healthy just from a human standpoint, right? But, like, I really just want to see, like, if he stays healthy, and, like, obviously their line is not great still, but, like, no matter how it turns out, like, I don't care how it turns out, just being an objective observer. I'm just fascinated to see, like, all right, let's see what happens when he stays healthy. Like, maybe it pans out that he just doesn't have it. Okay, well, then we have an answer. Like, the thing with him is, like, I just want, I want to see how, you know, the answer plays out. Because now it's like, if he stays healthy, like, no, not that he's making excuses. When you say no more excuses, he's not making them. But, like, there's no more, like, asterisk attached to it. Like, let's see it. And let's see how he's deployed by a coach who like knows what the heck he's doing offensively, not Jason Garrett. Right. So, I hope that happens because, then we'll be able to say like, okay, you know what? Maybe the number two pick was ill-advised, wasn't so bad. Or you know what? Maybe that was a colossal disaster of a decision.
And the interesting thing about this, and this is something I'm sure we'll talk about all year. Even if he has a great year, I still see this as probably his last year with the Giants.
Yeah.
You just can't give a running back a big second contract. I think Joe Shane knows that. I don't know. I mean, yeah, even the franchise tag would probably be too much. I imagine that'll probably be around $10 million or something like that. And that's just too much for a running back right now. So I mean, he has a lot to gain for himself. I mean, if he plays well, the offense will be better. So that's going to be a storyline for sure. Receiver. it's pretty, I mean, it's kind of the same stuff we've always talked about and we'll probably talk about for a long time. If those three guys don't stay healthy, they're in trouble. I think the more interesting thing beyond like the Kadarius Toney, Kenny Galladay, Shepard stuff is Darius Slayton. I think we've talked about this a little bit on here, but it's just like wild to me that those three guys have been out for all of the team drills and Slayton has had fewer first team reps than CJ Board, than David Sills, and Richie James have all had more first team reps than him. And Wandell Robinson, probably around the same. Travis Toivonen has had more reps than him. And when he's gotten the reps, he's like had a lot of drops too. It's just been like a tough spring for him. I mean, he could bounce back in training camp, but like the odds are going up that he's going to be a cut down guy in September.
Yeah, it hasn't been good for him just in terms of deployment and production. You would have thought coming into the spring, like, okay, this is his chance to shine, considering that, yeah, that, you know, Sterling Shepard, obviously, we knew he was going to be out in the spring. But Kenny Galladay didn't practice much for an, you know, undisclosed, seemingly minor injury. Who knows? And so it's like, okay, there's opportunity for him to be the number one outside receiver with the starters in the spring. And it didn't materialize that way. Yeah. So I don't know what could they get for him in a trade? Is this going to be a repeat of the James Bradbury situation where Joe Shane just convinces himself?
I think at this point, if they were going to trade him, it would probably be a BJ Hill type thing.
Yeah.
Like you trade. I mean, the crazy part about the BJ Hill thing in retrospect is that they gave a draft pick and BJ Hill, and BJ Hill wound up playing great. But yeah, like you, like a player for player swap, like maybe they trade him for a corner. They could use another corner. I think Slane will get another job. Like, whether he gets claimed on waivers or somebody picks him up after the fact, like he's perfectly capable NFL wide receiver.
I mean, all of the factors just point to him not being here in week one. Yeah. You know, whether final year of his rookie contract, wasn't drafted by this GM, $2.5 million in cap savings potentially for a cut or a trade for a team that really needs the cap room. The performance hasn't been great here in the spring, and he really hasn't been a blossomed into the type of player maybe they hoped he might be after that kind of surprising rookie year. And then they have bodies in the room when everyone's healthy, which is a big when or if.
Yep.
So
there's four receivers locked in ahead of him.
It just, there's not really much working in his favor for being here week one. In a different situation, maybe, but this has become just not a good situation for him on multiple levels.
Yeah. I mean, he's a change of scenery type guy. Maybe he'll do better somewhere else now. It's weird because I feel like he was one of the few things you could feel good about after 2019, because he had that great rookie year that nobody saw coming. Fifth round pick, getting 700 yards and 8 touchdowns in a bad year for the Giants. Like, that was, it feels like so long ago at this point. It's just crazy to where we've come to. But this happens sometimes, you know, guys, you know, get in their own head, or, you know, they teams figure them out or whatever it is. I think ultimately he was never going to be a number one or two, which they kind of forced him into being for the last couple of years. So interested to see where he lands. But at tight end, I think this has been pretty interesting. Daniel Bellinger seems pretty locked in as the starter. I mean, I know it's very early, but the thing that's been even more surprising than that is that Ricky Seals-Jones, who I thought, you know, he's a veteran that had some experience. When they signed him, they didn't really have anybody on the roster at tight end. I'm at the point where I don't know if he's going to make the team. Like, I saw him running with the third team the other day, and that undrafted rookie Austin Allen has gotten some first team reps. Like, I mean, it's not like Ricky Seals-Jones is a guy anybody is, you know, scared about when they're preparing to face an offense that hasn't. But that surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he's a known name. But here's where it's worth noting is, you know, because with the thing with cutting a guy is like, yeah, a team might want to do it, but can they do it? So there's like the two things, like, do they want to do it and can they do it? Right. So we don't know if they will want to do it, right? Because they could use some depth at tight end, especially if they're going to start a rookie. Yeah. So the one side of it is he's got a very manageable cap number, $1 million. And that's really all his salary.
Yeah, he did that like veteran salary benefit deal or whatever.
If they cut him, I mean, it's only $352,000 in dead money and they save $695,000. So it's not expensive to keep him. It's also not hard to cut him.
Yeah.
So
I feel like he's the kind of guy that, you know, when you get the roster cutdowns, a guy makes the team initially and then somebody gets cut that they're interested in and they claim them off waivers. Like they, you can find a guy that's Ricky Seals.
If that happens, I'll get that. That would be, you've laid out a very specific situation that certainly could happen. Yeah. So let's keep that in our pocket and that, give you,
give me credit, credit there if that happens,
but for guessing right, we'll forget about it in 2 days. But when they signed him, it's like, okay, yeah. I mean, I mean, this is why people look at this roster and say they have so many problems because everyone complained, and oftentimes rightfully so, about Evan Engram. But then it becomes like, okay, well, like, careful what you wish for, because this team has had no cap because of Dave Gettleman. And so they had no ability to have immediate upgrades, and they're going to be in a position where, look, let's be fair to Bellinger. On one hand, he might give him every benefit of the doubt because he hasn't played yet, but he hasn't played yet. So, like, let's also recognize that it's going to take a little bit for him to adjust. So, yeah, I think tight end could be a major problem for this team.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, you're relying on a fourth-round pick. So, I mean – that's a big leap. So offensive line is always the most interesting position on the Giants, I would say. Let's see. Andrew Thomas is still banged up with his ankle. He was limited. I don't know. I mean, you would think he'll be good for training camp, but we'll see. In terms of the rest, Shane Lemieux is locked in as the starter at left guard, I think, which is interesting. Feliciano's at center. Glowinski's still at right guard. You talked to Evan Neal one-on-one. We can get into that in a second. One thing that I was surprised by is that they've been using Joshua Ozudu, the guy they drafted in the third round at left tackle with Thomas out, which I thought when they drafted him, I thought, okay, this is a guy they want to win the left guard starting job. And he's like competition with Lemieux and some of the veterans they signed. Seems like they want Lemieux to be the left guard and Ozudu to be like a swing backup everywhere, which is an interesting role. I mean, he's a third round pick. You ideally want your third round pick to start, but I don't know. What did you make of that? That surprised me. I thought he was just going to lock this guy in at left guard, but I guess it makes sense to see what he can do elsewhere too.
If not start, then just like learn one position, right? Yeah. So like,
they put on a rookie to have like.
It's a lot to ask the guy to learn a couple positions. So like, maybe he's not going to be a guard. Maybe he's going to be a backup tackle. Yeah, but that's weird because
maybe they view him as like the Matt Parrott kind of guy. I don't know.
I mean, they drafted this guy in the third round. And you already have both tackle spots solidified, so there's no path to him starting at either tackle spot, but you have him as a backup tackle right now. So, like, look, it could just be, like, moving around, moving pieces, and there will be a full-fledged left guard competition in training camp, maybe. But, you know, Shane Lemieux was the starter for what it's worth going into last year before his knee injury. You know, he was the best of a not great group of options that they had going into last year, given, you know, the fact that he wasn't excellent, to say the least, you know, in 2020 as a rookie. And so, left guard remains an intriguing spot. Obviously, center, not much to talk about there. Right guard, not much to talk about. You know, all the other spots are solidified. And left guard is the one where we think there could be some competition. But like you said, then again, maybe not. Ozudu was the most interesting, I think, revelation in the spring in terms of not like necessarily how he performed, because who knows? There's no pads on, right? So you can't read into it. But just the deployment of him, I thought, was a revelation. So we'll see. I mean, they could change up things in training camp, but I mean, it's hard for these offensive linemen to really impress, per se. In the spring.
Although I will say, somebody asked me on Twitter after my article went up about should they be worried about, like, the center position. I think they were asking about, like, backups. And so I like actually think about who their backup centers were. And based on who they've been practicing, it's either going to be, like, Ben Bredesen, Max Garcia, who I thought was going to be a left guard guy, and they've been working him at center a little bit, Jameel Douglas. And like, so, I mean, the reality is any team, if they get their offensive linemen get injured, they're in trouble. But, like, if the Giants lose any of their offensive linemen, really, but center in particular, these are all guys that haven't really played center, so...
It's wild to see to have seen Bredesen working at center. My goodness. And let's you know, touch on this. Like, Feliciano is got to be no disrespect here, but the guy's probably one of the worst starting centers in the NFL, right? Is that fair? Like, am I being right? I mean, given the performance and and also the fact that he really hasn't played center much. So like that really hasn't been talked about much this spring, the fact that this guy was a guard for the most part in Buffalo. they still have some problems on the offensive line. I guess I can touch on Evan Neal, and you know what, like maybe his performance will be, you know, maybe that he won't perform well, like just like Andrew Thomas didn't perform well as a rookie, just like a lot of guys don't perform well as a rookie. But, you know, I do think that it's been pretty impressive, you know, watching him, you know, run after practice, hearing him talk about his preparation, and getting a chance to talk to him yesterday. I think he's an impressive guy in terms of he gets it. Like, he gets what he has to do. He has the physical size, obviously. So there's no questions about his size. I don't think he's a guy like Mekhi Becton who has, like, the weight issue thing, per se, just because he's really well put together. But, you know, now let's go see if he can do it and process and play quick and move quick and all the things he knows he has to do. So, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves in terms of, like, crowning this guy. But I do think that you come away from the spring, for what it's worth, for an offensive lineman with no pads on, the kid did a nice job, it seems like, of absorbing things and understanding, you know, what it takes to prepare and to do the extra stuff at this level. So I think there's certainly plenty of potential there. And you saw with Andrew Thomas, like, he's a diligent guy too. It took him a year, and it takes a lot of these guys a year. It might take him a year. Like, I think maybe that's the biggest lesson with Evan Neal. Like, if he's playing poorly in the middle of his
– yeah, don't jump to
– it might be instructive to look at what happened with Thomas. So.
Yeah, and they're I mean, as you mentioned a little bit, I mean, they are similar in their personalities a little bit, I think. They're, like, really reserved guys that you wouldn't think are guys going to go out there and kill a defensive lineman, and they do. So.
Almost very, very studious type personalities.
Yeah, but Neil has these, like, large glasses that he wears and stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, we can – so I think that's pretty much the offense. I think, you know, if everybody's not healthy –
Mike Kay would note that you didn't talk about fullback.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have one on the roster. Jeremiah Hall didn't stand out. Yeah, I mean, the offense in general, I'm curious. We still don't really know who's calling plays. That's going to be one of the biggest storylines of the fall, I would say. So I'm curious to see how that plays out. But defensive-wise, I mean, Wink Martindale is the overall takeaway. We can touch on him in a second. Defensive line, there's not really much to talk about there. I mean, it's Leonard Williams, Dexter Lawrence. You kind of know what you're getting. Justin Ellis is going to fill the Austin Johnson role, and that's kind of that. Edge rusher is interesting. Kayvon Thibodeau, we didn't really get to see him that much because he got banged up pretty early in OTAs. I can't remember when exactly. But what they wound up doing was giving Ellerson Smith and Jihad Ward a lot of time with the ones. Ellerson Smith, I think, has looked pretty good. It's hard, again, I mean, I guess we don't need to keep saying it, but it doesn't really, it's hard to really tell now, but it seems like they're moving him around a lot. He's getting a lot of pressure. I think he's like a ball of clay that Wink Martindale can mold, because he has, like, great athletic tools. He's, like, 6'5" or whatever it is, and 250. He's very athletic. He's very raw. So I am very curious to see what he becomes, because I think this is the coaching staff to get him into the right place, whether he is it impactful this year or not. Like, people have to remember, he only played in 8 games last year. He not many snaps. Didn't play at all the year before that in college. And I think he started football late. You wrote a long story about him. I think he started football pretty late. But he's kind of one of the interesting guys for me for training camp.
For sure. I mean, versatility, like what he has in what he lacks in maybe like girth and weight, he has in, you know, the ability to be long and versatile. And another pretty quiet kid, but you need a creative defensive coordinator to perhaps get the most out of him. I thought he did some good things in the spring. And I think, you know, we know we were talking about this the other day at practice. Like you mentioned the D-line, it's almost not even worth talking about because we know how it's going to look essentially. Yeah. The two starting outside linebackers, okay, Thibodeau, Ojulari. But who's going to be the third guy? I think that'll be the interesting thing to see. Like, so who's going to be the third edge rusher? And we know O'Shane Zimenez is basically – been placed out curbside at this point. And so I think Ellerson Smith, Jihad Ward are a couple of guys to watch there. So in one hand, you have a young guy in Smith who's kind of quiet, versatile, and the other guy.
Ward's a character.
Ward, total, absolute, whatever the opposite of the word wallflower would be, right? This guy's a character.
Kind of like a gregarious, like.
He's loud, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he's boisterous.
He had some, like, really – I mean, he was a great podium guy, which we obviously appreciate. But he was saying some stuff about how he's staying on Kayvon Thibodeau to, you know, stay in his playbook and stuff like that. I think it's good that they have an adult in the room, as they, as the Giants have said for a long time about other areas of their organization. But they have an adult in the room, which I think is good, because that is a very young group of pass rushers. So.
Yeah, I think he'll be a good mentor. And you wrote this the other day, a good mentor for Kayvon Thibodeau. And so, I think there's some interesting pieces there that may not be the sexy names per se, but like Ellerson Smith, if you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you're obviously a pretty dedicated Giant fan, so you know who he is. So you're going to, you know, that's something to worth following, I think, in training camp. It's not going to be the headline story, but it's certainly something worth following. And you never know, like, when a situational edge rusher could make a significant impact. If the guy, maybe he only gets 20 snaps a game, but if you're playing third down and you have the ability to get into the backfield and make a big play, that, you know, those 20 snaps, one, all you need is one of them to pay off. And so he's certainly a guy to watch. And yeah, he's got a good story too.
You wrote a great story about him last year. Unfortunately, then he wound up not playing for half the season after that.
Yeah, and he'll get a chance to play back home in Minneapolis on Christmas Eve year. Yeah. So that'll be a cool moment for him. You know, we'll see what kind of role he has in this defense. It's really up to him to kind of continue to progress, and up to Wink Martindale to find a spot for this guy. Because like you said, he's got the athleticism, raw guy, interesting guy.
Yeah, and I there was a couple plays I saw the other day where they had him lined up like as a sort of like inside linebacker, and even dropped into coverage on one play. So that they clearly, like, he's a guy that maybe they just view as a guy that can move everywhere and get just to get him to at the quarterback and stuff like that. So that's going to be interesting. Maybe by the end of the year, he's playing a lot and he's making some plays.
Yeah, I think that's what with Wink, it's worth noting that. I mean, we talk about the blitz is the obvious, the man-to-man coverage the obvious. One of the other things is like the disguising that he does, yeah. And that's a good example of it, yeah, where you're moving.
Feliciano had some great quotes about that. How it's like, Feliciano was like, I go up to Wink before every practice just to get an idea of what they're going to throw at us. Sometimes he lies to me because he wants to beat us. But he said, I have something special for you today. And that day, like, Julian Love was playing up at linebacker, Dane Belton was blitzing a bunch of times from safety. You had Ellison Smith at middle linebacker. Like, so if he's confusing the Giants offense, you know, I guess maybe that's bad in the long run, but like the idea that they can be confusing the opponent is going to be good. Inside linebacker, again, that's not like one that's very exciting either. You have Blake Martinez injured. Tay Crowder's, you know, he's kind of lingering there. I don't know if he'll start all year, if they even play two inside linebackers all that much. They drafted a couple guys, McFadden, Beavers. I don't think either of us really have much to say there. Secondary, I think we should talk about, though, because that's
a big one.
We've talked about this on here. Like, it's a concern. Very young. Darnay Holmes and Aaron Robinson missed a bunch of practices. I think that was just out of abundance of caution. I think they're okay. Maybe have some nicks. Like, I think I was told Darnay has a foot thing. I don't know what Robinson's is. But I think those two guys are probably, at least as of now, I would say, are probably going to open the season as like the outside and nickel starters, probably Cordell Flott, maybe pushing Darnay. So a guy that like was getting a lot of snaps on the outside with Robinson out was Michael Jacquet, who they signed on the first day of OTAs. I only had heard of him because he started like a game. I think it might even have been against the Giants. I can't remember. He started a game for the Eagles 2 years ago. And so he was like the top backup at outside corner. Like, I don't know. You have Xavier McKinney, Julian Love, and Dane Belton at safety, which I guess is, you know, two veterans and a rookie. But I don't know. This secondary, like, they have some quarterbacks they'll have to play this year that are pretty good. It's going to be bumpy, I would say.
To say the least. I mean, and then just it's interesting because, like, right before we got on here and started recording this, you and I are kind of pre-writing one of those standard issue player countdown thingies for the summer. And I was just writing one on Aaron Robinson. And, you know, he did play 149 snaps last year at outside corner, 92 in the slot. So he didn't play a lot, period. But the one thing I kind of wrote in there, just thinking about, if he can somehow play well, that will solve so many problems for this team and his defense. Like, he's got to be one of the bigger keys. Now, he might not be, you know, Adoree Jackson's your number one corner, he's really important. But if Aaron Robinson can somehow surprise and be a pretty good player, like, that will go a long way toward making this defense a lot better, I think, than people expect it to be. Because if you just get baseline level play from Adoree Jackson, even not as good. Adoree Jackson was a pretty good player last year, even if it's not as good as that, right? That's acceptable level play. And if Robinson can give you something just shy of that, that exceeds expectations, then that'll let Martindale do a lot of the blitzing that he wants to do. So Aaron Robinson's an enormous key for this defense. And we just have not seen a lot from him. Like, we've seen so little from, I actually like referred to his NFL.com pre-draft scouting report in this, this thing I wrote, just because he barely played last year. And like you said, we didn't see him much with what is a seemingly minor injury here in the spring. So, just waiting to see this guy a little bit more out there.
Yeah. I mean, he's an X factor for this team. And I mean, this goes back to what we were saying, the offensive line. Even whether he's good or not, if he's injured, or especially if Adoree might be, his importance is almost more tied to the depth than even like how good or bad he is. I mean, he's
yeah.
good. But like, if you lose Adoree, like, you're in a lot of trouble. Like, I don't even know who. Like, I guess you have to play Aaron Robinson at the top against the top, or you put Julian Love out there. Like, I don't know. Maybe they find a veteran that gets cut that, you know, has some experience in the fall. But on one hand, it's concerning. On the other, I think it's smart that they're, you know, this is a rebuilding year. And so you're kind of throwing a lot of darts and seeing if any of them connect. That wasn't a really great analogy, but I think you get my point. So they have Aaron Robinson. If he's good, then you have a long-term solution for cheap. If he's not, you can draft somebody. You can find somebody else. You know, they took a swing at Cordell Flott. You have a young Darnay Holmes. Xavier McKinney. I mean, probably move on from Julian Love after this year, maybe. But so they have all these young guys that are going to get a lot of snaps, as opposed to last year, where you had Logan Ryan, who was aging. You had James Bradbury, who was, you know, he's not old, but he is declining, I would say, athletically. So I don't know. At the very least, you have some young guys you can throw out there, and if they don't work, then you reboot next year.
Yeah. And then just kind of you have to just suffer the suffered through some of the growing pains, or maybe not even the growing pains, just the pains of players not being that good.
In the
meantime, because look, I mean, like Julian Love, it's not really like growing pains. Like, maybe the guy's just a backup level player.
Julian Love, like, coaches have been like allergic to making him a starter in his career so far. It's like when he was a rookie, they waited until the very end of the year to finally play him. They really didn't want to. It didn't seem like Judge's coaching staff really wanted to play him, but he's so versatile that they kept on having to because of all the injuries. And you know, he's a perfectly fine player. He's a good, like, backup to have, I think. He's a good personality.
Yeah, but, you know, and now they're going to start him, and you know, we'll see if that. The problem is, you know, when you're not a great roster, you wind up having to start guys who should be backups. I mean, it's not rocket science, and that's a position the Giants are in quite a few fairly important positions. And so they're going to have to try to scheme around that. I think we've been saying this since the end of last year. No matter who was the coach or who was the GM of this team in 2022, the coaching staff was going to have to do like some serious heavy lifting.
Heavy lifting, yeah.
To get the young guys, to mold your returning players, who right, so decent amount of young guys in there, and then you're going to have to play a lot of young guys, so that's a heavy lift too from a coaching perspective. So,
I'd say Dable's going to is maybe a chance for him to really like prove what he's made of. Honestly, as a coach, like, he's going to have to earn his money this year. Hey, man,
if they wind up winning more games than expected, I think you obviously credit the players, but you almost have to credit certainly the coaching staff, considering where they came from. And these are largely the same group of guys. I mean, there's not a lot of change here on this roster.
I was even on another podcast talking Giants earlier today, and I made the point that I think this might be one of the only times I could think of where a team might wind up having more rookies on the 53-man roster than guys they signed in free agency. Like, they have 11 draft picks. You think that a few of the undrafted rookies will make it probably. And they really didn't sign that many guys. Like, there's a lot of like under the radar guys, I guess, like if you count like Davis Webb, if he makes it, or Jamie Gillen or whatever, but I don't know. I feel like it's going to be closer than it usually is.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's just the reality for this team. They're going to have to start and have significant contributions from a bunch of young guys, whether those are rookies or second year players. I mean, Aaron Robinson might as well be a rookie. And so,
yeah.
And he was drafted to play in the slot. And now he's being asked to play outside. And I, you know, it's weird because I asked him, I said, when's the last time you played a lot of outside corner? And then there, I don't know, I guess his answer was vague. It was like, like never. I don't know. I guess that's what I got from
a,
that.
He's not a big, he's not a big talker.
So, yeah, we've said it time and again that, you know, this season is going to be a lot about figuring out what they have for the future. And that's what it is in rebuilding. Like you said, you just, you throw what you have out there and see what sticks.
Exactly. We don't need to dive into special teams. They got Graham Gano back. They got Casey Kreider. Jamie Gillen will probably be fine as a punter. Curious to see what they do with returner. If Richie James makes it, he probably is the returner. You want, ideally, they, when they drafted Kadarius Toney, you thought he would be a punt returner, but maybe that'll be Wandale. Yeah, I think we cover pretty much everything. Anything else you want to add before we get out?
No, I mean, we're going to do another one of these episodes coming up here, so we're not going on summer break just yet. In fact, we're not going on summer break at all. We're going to do some of these. You'll when I'm off, you'll have Steve Politi on. And there's
always something going on with the Giants, too.
So we'll look ahead to training camp in the next episode, but we just want to review the spring. So for as light as it was, there was certainly plenty that happened. And so we have, you know, plenty to talk about.
You have that vacation to Cape Cod planned, right? We're going to, you know, look out over and I'm just kidding. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. We'll get you guys another pod next week. I mean, Daryl and I will both be going on vacation pretty soon, but we're still going to try to get you guys some episodes throughout the summer. Check out our allworkingng.com, and we'll talk to you guys soon.